A healthy life starts with great sleep. Wake refreshed with Avocado's GOTS-certified organic green mattress, delivering breathable, back-loving support, natural materials from Avocado's own sustainable wool and latex farms, easy financing, a one-year sleep trial, and deep, restorative slumbers. Organic sleep awaits at avocadomattress.com.
Wait, how was Indiana? How was your vacation from with your family?
Clear like Indiana.
I think my cousins actually have a... This is funny. My cousins are married to brothers. Like my cousin's sisters are married to brothers. So like my cousin married this guy, John. Mm-hmm. And then John has a brother, Dan. And my cousin has a sister, my cousin. And so... Two pairs of brothers and two pairs of sisters married into the same family.
I have to tell you.
Very fun.
I'm a firm no on it.
It feels like incest, but it's so not, is the thing. Here's the thing. But I think
don't they call it a thing where if both of those couples have kids, their kids are like...
How are their kids? Siblings?
Yeah. Something gross.
Wait, incredible. Well, have you seen those stories of like identical twins marrying identical twins?
Yes. And then like... I'm not okay with it, Carrie. I have to take a stand. And here, where better to do it than here?
Than here, on the safety of our podcast. Listen, that's why I'm just not going to get married or have kids, because I feel like I won't run the risk of eking you out. You know?
That's really important.
And it's important. I think in this working relationship, I don't want to freak you out.
No, I really don't want you to freak me out either. Thank you so much for making that sacrifice.
Honestly, Quinn, you're so welcome.
Stay alone. Stay alone.
Wait, tell me, how was Clear Water? Clear Lake?
Clear Lake. It was great.
Clear body of water.
It was a great trip. It was a cute little cabin, nothing fancy. It has so much rust in the water that when you wash your clothes, it turns them orange. But it was very, very, very cute. And Matt and I slept in a double bed, which felt like more intimate than I was prepared for.
Yeah, you're used to a king size bed.
I was like, stop touching me. And he's like, I actually can't. We have to be this physically close in this bed. And I was like, okay. So I tried to just like put the rage aside and deal with it. And
then did the kids hop in bed with you guys too?
They had their own bedroom that had a pack and play and a single bed in it. And they did great.
Oh, nice.
Koa would visit us a lot at night. And the first night especially, he saw a lot of ghosts. He kept coming in and being like, oh, mama, there's so many ghosts in my room, and it's the darkness. What happens is when it's this dark where I'm sleeping, all the shadows turn into big, dark ghosts. And I was like, okay, so we had to, like, get him a nightlight. But he did pretty well. I think that it was a great trip because we were actively in the water at all times doing kind of water adventuring, and Matt got to inner tube. The kids both – Griff's too little and Koa's too scared. So Matt did a lot of inner tubing.
Inner tubing is so much fun.
Pulling it, on the back of the boat. So fun. Really great.
Oh,
and the
God.
Amish are out there, and we got some baked goods from the Amish. And
always trust an Amish with a baked good. You want
and little
a Mennonite, you want an Amish, you want someone with a bonnet making your pies.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, for sure.
I feel like one helps with the hair, no cross-contamination, but also I just trust them. I do. I really trust them.
Oh my God, I just got a phishing text that I really like. Hello, sorry to bother you. Your number appears in my address book, but I forget who you are. Have we met before?
Oh my God, someone texted me and was like, hey, what are you doing? And I was like, I don't have this number. Like, who is this? You know, I don't know. I give my number out to anybody who asks. And I just don't always respond. And of course, it was someone that was like, oh, I'm sorry. It's me, Tiffany. We haven't met. And it was like they sent a picture of themselves. And I said, that's for sure not you. There's no way. There's no way, Tiffany. That's not you. Are you going to reply?
I reported it as junk. I don't have time for that. Matt gets into full conversations with these people. Somebody was like, are you still coming to the house on the Monday? And he's like, yes, of course. Do you still have that swimming pool shaped like a donut? And the person will write back and be like, no, the Malibu Beach home. And he'll be like, Barbie? Oh, the Malibu Beach home. I can't wait. Are we going to make that funny cocktail sassafras pineapple again? And like Matt just like is like having a great time.
Is this the moment where you say, Matt, I need you to get a job.
Get a fucking job.
I knew that was coming.
That is definitely, that's 100% of time when I say that. Oh, you want to hear a true crime in the neighborhood? A true crime
happening. There's something
happening.
Strange in and the neighborhood.
It's so strange. You're not even
Wait,
ready.
Tell me.
I don't think
yes,
you're ready
I
for
hear.
This jelly. Okay. There is an old woman in this neighborhood who has been asking people for money and kind of roughing them up if they say no. And she's an old woman. And
Wait, roughing them up? What do you mean, roughing them
she'll
up?
She'll go up to you and be like, give me money. And if you're like, no, she'll like slap you. Or she'll like grab your arm. She just like hurts you physically if you don't give her money. And she, people are talking about her on like the
parenting boards,
all the apps.
Give me the apps.
Like,
give me the
next door
app.
The like Facebook neighborhood group. She's being really aggressive. She's hurting people. And like she is like even hurting kids. Yeah.
Oh,
so like a woman was out with like her 12-year-old and she saw the 12-year-old had money and tried to take it out of his hands. And when he like didn't give it to her, she like tried to hit him. So then people are commenting on this and they're like, I know where she lives and she's really rich is the other thing about her. So she's lives
she
with her kids.
Like,
and
does she have like dementia? Or
she
something?
Must. She must. But like
how old? She might be like that's like some stuff from like the Great Depression.
She's
you know
a
what I mean?
Rich
like, she
old woman is walking around my neighborhood beating people up and trying to take their money. It is the strangest thing ever.
There's been so much that's happened that we haven't talked about and that we probably would have talked about over just the past year. Just in this podcast, because we haven't been able to talk about it like
Oh, you want to do like a highlights reel? Like, do you feel like we should have like a PowerPoint where we're like, in January,
what we
the
missed,
big news
just go
was...
on Patreon, just go on Patreon. No, but I think we really didn't talk about the Titan, and that was so sad. The only like peaceful thing too about it is it happened so quick that it was like it didn't
fraction
register
of a
like
second
they
or
even,
something.
They yeah,
didn't
they couldn't
know.
Even like feel
I
pain.
I do think that whenever you read about a death, there is something super comforting about the idea that a person didn't know they were going to die. I wouldn't want to know.
But it was wild, the stuff coming out of that story of like how they were functioning, this submarine. Like, did you see that? It was like an off-brand game controller.
No.
Did you see this?
No, I didn't
see
this.
Oh my God, Quinn. Okay, so when it was all coming out, everybody was like looking into everything and what was happening and, you know, trying to figure out what was going on. And the way that the submarine was controlled was from a Logitech, like PlayStation knockoff game controller. So they were like, how are you? It's like one of those with like the cursors.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they were navigating this submarine to the bottom of the ocean.
Oh my God.
And so what's crazy is apparently when it imploded and they had footage of like the imploded thing, apparently there was like, you see the Logitech game controller in the sand by the wreckage of the Titanic.
Jesus.
It was wild.
So dark. So dark.
Really dark.
Really creepy. Really.
Truly.
Darkly.
Creeply.
Welcome.
I'm Carrie Ipama.
I'm Quinlan Posner.
And this is Truly Darkly Creeply.
It's us. We're back. We have a show. You missed it. Now you're not missing it. Now you wish it would go away. Stop fighting with us so much.
Wait, so question. Were you upset at the rust on your clothes in Clearwater? Clear Lake? Clearwater, Florida? Clear Lake, Indiana?
No, I mean, it was, you know... You know what? It kind of looks like a bad dye job, like a cool, funky tie-dye situation, and I'm rolling with it. I will tell you that the lake is 6.5 miles around, and I ran around it twice.
Wait, in the same day?
No, on different days. But still, I did do the run, and then I lived to tell the tale, and then I went back and tried it
Quinn,
once more.
6, and did you run the whole time?
No, I didn't. I really tried, but I didn't. But I probably ran 4 of the 6 miles or 5, maybe.
Did you think about...
I listened to podcasts.
Water chasing you?
Oh, my God. Right?
In our Patreon, we made a joke that was... Well, it was... We talked about... I just recently talked about the 1964 earthquake in Alaska. Mm-hmm. And the side effects that killed the most people were the tsunamis that happened from the earthquake. And in a certain town, the only people that survived the tsunami were the people that outran it. And so Quinn and I had said, hey, maybe something we should use about that. Instead of thinking that someone is chasing you and trying to attack you, think of it as you're outrunning a tsunami.
And that you have an opportunity, like a chance, I mean. Like, it's like, usually you think tsunami, you just think, that's it. That's a death sentence. But apparently not. Apparently you cannot run them. So you can run as fast as you can.
Now, I don't think I've ever run a mile straight.
Really?
Here's the thing. No, I don't think I ever have. I can't do it. I think my boobs are too big.
I think you have run a mile and you're confused about how long a mile is because...
I'm not. I'm really not, Quinn. I can tell you, I get so bored when I am running. I get... And I can only think about the parts of my body that hurt when mm-hmm. I do it. I can't do it. I can't. Like, whenever, it's why whenever I work the marathon,
maybe
or I
running
watch the marathon,
to
I just am bawling. I'm crying because
right.
I'm like, these people are so brave.
I thought you're like, I wish I could do it. Please stop.
I do. I wish I could do it. But I
thought you were crying angry tears, which I like to picture you watching a marathon and crying tears of anger and rage.
Just anger and rage.
Fuck you.
No,
just
fuck
on the sidelines screaming at everybody. Are you trying to make me look bad and feel bad?
No, I think I've always wanted to do a marathon. And every time I watch a marathon, I'm like, maybe this is the year. This is the year. But I got to tell you, it's not going to happen.
No, just do a little one. Do a 5K or something. Do something chill. I did the women's half marathon. I told you that, though. But
I forget because if I knew you did that, I would think more of you and I can't handle the inequality of it. You know what I mean? I have to.
It doesn't balance with what you think of me.
No,
I understand that.
It really doesn't. I have to.
Oh my gosh.
I have to keep my sanity.
Tell you what we did on Sunday because it's something you would love. And I bet you're going to want to go with us next time we do it.
Okay.
So there's something called Rock and Roll Playhouse. And I got to just shout them out. What they do is they are a cover band for things like David Bowie, Fish, Van Morrison, Bruce Springsteen. They do all different. I think some of the band stays the same and the singer changes, but they're a cover band. And they perform an hour-long concert for kids of those songs. And so they'll turn one of the songs into a Freeze song. They'll do a parachute at some point, and they have somebody out on the dance floor with the kids kind of being like, wow, that's the bassist. And do you know what? And like explaining everything. And basically
what?
It's like, we're going to do like this concert. We went to the Taylor Swift one on Sunday at Brooklyn Bowl.
Oh, my God.
And we like danced with the kids. Griffin couldn't nap because the concert was during his nap. And Griff was dancing so hard. And then I held him and he fell asleep on me during the concert. Both my kids were wearing noise-canceling headphones because they're a little sensitive. But they were like jamming. And Griff falls asleep on me. He's dead asleep, like sweating on me. And then he just lifts his head at some point and looks at me and goes, it's so exciting. And then he fell back asleep.
Oh, my God. I am bursting. I am
so
what?
Cute. It was so cute. You know, Ko was at zoo camp and when he came home yesterday, I was like, Matt and I were like, what'd you do at zoo camp? And he goes, I made my own poop. And there was just a pause. And then Matt goes, yeah, we did that here too.
And ours was free. His cost money, unfortunately.
Yeah. So he says he gets to bring home the poop at the end of the week. And you better believe I'm excited to lay my hands on it.
What did he make it out of?
I don't know. I was just like, what are you talking about?
Do you think it's
about?
Like a baby shower game where they put like candy in a diaper?
I think that they are talking about different kinds of scat because they're zoo detectives and they're looking at different footprints and scat to try to determine what animal left it behind. So I think
That's
he probably
really
got
cute.
To make... Maybe like fox poop or, God forbid, bear poop. Who knows? We'll see. I'll let you know.
It really could go either way is the deal.
I'll put it
we
in your
know.
Room for when you get back in September.
Please put
I'll
it
put
on
it on your
pillow.
Pillow poops with an Andes mint on top.
Minty.
Or maybe even embedded, so you have to search for it.
Yeah, fun. Who knows? Fun. It sounds like it's going to be great fun. I can't wait.
Why don't we do some stories?
Should I tell a story? Hold on.
Yeah, I wish you would. Ooh, big stretch. Wet leg. What's wet leg? What is wet leg?
That feels good. That stretch feels good. What is wet leg? It's an incredible band.
Oh, cool.
I've played you their song, Chaise Long.
She's long.
Chaise Long.
Chaise Lounge? I'm just going to keep pretending I mishear it. This conversation's going nowhere.
I hope this whole episode is that. What did you say? Huh?
Who?
Okay, so I'm telling the story of Michelle Notek. I got this information from Wikipedia, Daily Mail, Medium, all that's interesting.
Why do I know that name?
I pitched it. I might have pitched it. Look at you, how worried you are that
Michelle,
you know that name.
Notek.
Okay, so her name is Michelle.
I know why I know this.
Why?
I read a horrible book about this woman.
Oh, did you read the book about what that featured her daughters?
Yes.
Quinn?
It's horrifying. Okay. She is the scariest person in the world, I think.
It's truly terrifying. We talk about these stories, and I think with this one,
the book's called like Never Tell or something like that.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
It's really scary. It's fucking scary. Well, that's why when I did last week's episode, I was like, I'm going to do something a little bit lighter because this one is dork. It's really fucking dork.
It's dork-sided.
So we're going to call Michelle Shelley because that's what she calls herself. And I'm afraid of her, so I will honor what she calls herself.
Yeah.
So she grew up in Raymond, Washington, and she really didn't leave. That's where she stayed when she became an adult. But a little bit about her upbringing because, you know, here we are. We like to sort of give a full picture of the people, but I got to tell you, she's a monster. Anyway. It's hard because, like, you can have – spoiler, she's a fucking monster. But I think what's hard about it, too, is, like, you can look at someone's upbringing, and we've talked about this so many times, but it's, like, you see the hardship she had, but there are people that have experienced that hardship all the time who don't turn out to be a fucking monster like this woman. Mm-hmm. So she is the oldest of three siblings, and her mom was very mentally ill. She was an alcoholic, and I think she had a pretty tough – childhood, right? Like from when she was born to when she was 6 years old, her mom was around, and I don't think it was a safe situation. Her mom, I think, mm-hmm. also was a sex worker, but again, she dealt with alcohol abuse and was pretty mentally ill. So at 6 years old, her mom vanishes, and it leaves her as the oldest of her two brothers, right? And Shelley, at 6 years old, had to take care of her younger brothers. But I think because she was 6 years old, and I think she had a pretty abusive relationship with her mother, her version of, quote, taking care of her younger brothers was very much tormenting them.
Discipline. Right?
Yeah. But she was 6 years old. I think there's like a lot of impressionable stuff that happened to her at that age. Eventually, obviously, this girl, you know, wasn't taking care of her siblings for a long time. I'm sure it was pretty quick to discover that their mother was missing, and their father stepped in as well as their stepmom. And it seems like, based on what I read, that Shelley, at the age of six, you know, was brought into this home where she was no longer in charge, and she was very resentful. She was very resentful of her father. She was very resentful of her stepmom. And at 13, her mom, who was living on the streets, Sharon, was murdered. She was beaten to death. And, you know, Shelley acted out. She was just a bad egg, it seems like, from the beginning. And again, we can get into that. You know, it's because of how she was raised, but like, just she's doing crazy, weird, bad shit. Like, with her brothers, she would place shards of glass at the bottom of her brother's shoes. And at 14 years
old... Did they step in it? I mean, awful.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. I think she just, like, I think that control, and she just wanted... She just
hurt people.
Hurt people, fucking hurt people. I would say she hurt people too much in her life.
She overstepped.
At 14 years old, Shelley accuses her dad of rape. And, you know, this is a hard thing, right?
Right.
Because you believe survivors of sexual abuse. When a doctor examined her, they said it was a lie. That is what I read. And she then moves out of her home with her father and moves in with her grandparents. While she's living with her grandparents, she babysits the neighbors' kids. But when she would babysit them, she would like lock them in rooms and she would use furniture to barricade the door. While she was staying with her grandfather, she then levels allegations of sexual abuse at her grandfather. And she grows up. Again, these are not substantiated. Nothing has... These accusations don't go any further than an accusation. It's a really challenging thing to talk about because, again, I want to believe survivors of sexual abuse. But based on what we know of Michelle Shelley
and her personality, it's like, yeah, it's very tricky because you're like, we know a lot about who you are ended up being. And there's two different narratives that make sense. Either you're a pathological liar and you were trying to hurt people mm-hmm. from the very beginning, or people hurt you over and over again, and it helped build the monster that we know you to be. And it could be either way.
When she accused her father, they found like a magazine that had the like a title like "I was raped at 15" or something, and it's dog-eared. Like they could see where she, you know, maybe got the idea from. Again, she is a monster, so it's hard to feel sympathy for her. At the same point in time, she was a kid, and it's clear that she's, you know, acting out mm-hmm. and probably needs some help. Maybe some early intervention would have maybe helped in mm-hmm. this situation. But, and this was also in the, you know, mid 70s to early 80s. So I do think that, you know, at a time, I don't think a lot of survivors of sexual abuse were taken care of just in general too, as well at the time, right? Mm-hmm. Which also adds, which is adding it difficult to talk about, right? Mm-hmm. So by 1987, she had been married once. She had two kids, Nikki and Sammy. And then she meets this guy, David. And David is this Navy veteran, and he works in construction. And so the two of them get married, and David, Shelley, her two kids from another marriage, Nikki and Sammy, they become a family. And from what I read, David really like takes these girls under his wings, right? He's also a bird. He is. He's a Boyd, is what you might call it. Yeah. They both have a daughter named Tori in 1989. And so their home in Raymond, Washington, it seems like, you know, when you looked at the girls, all three daughters, it seemed like they were always well-behaved, very well-dressed, put together. They just look like a very normal family, you know, mm-hmm. a mom, a dad, three daughters. And it seemed like they were a very generous family where they would open up their home for people who had nowhere else to go. What you don't know is happening at this time is that the daughters are experiencing a horrible amount of abuse at their home, right? I mean, I think you see this veneer of like well put together, well behaved kids. And I think you don't see what got them to be so well behaved and, you know, so clean cut. They talk a lot about Shelley's manipulation, where Shelley would like shower them with love and basically love bomb her kids. And then she would, in a split second, turn on them. She would beat them. She would verbally abuse them. She would do this thing called wallowing, where she would force her kids to like be in dirt, to strip naked, and in the middle of the night to roll them around in mud and then hose them down with cold water. That was her favorite punishment, was wallowing.
That is so intense.
If they used the bathroom without permission, they would get beaten. I mean, it's just like, and again, like this is the only thing that these poor children know, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is their mother. And so she would do this where she would, and we've seen this in abusive relationships and other cases where it's like people would be so horrible to someone and then all of a sudden they turn on the charm and the love. That's their programming. That's the manipulation. At one point, Shelley gets really upset at Nikki and she shoves her head through a glass door and says, "Look what you made me do." So if that just puts into context, just like how these poor girls are being treated. Meanwhile, like I said, they are offering up space in their home to people who need it. So Shane Watson is Michelle Notek's or Shelley Notek's nephew. He moves in with the family around 1988, so it's a little bit before Tori is born. And he moves in with them because his parents are not able to take care of him. His dad, Shelley's brother, is in jail, and his mom has some financial trouble. So Shelley goes, you know, we can take Shane, you know, in on the house. And she would, of course, abuse Shane. And I think it was this really scary thing with the daughters in the house. When somebody else was being abused, it meant that they weren't, right?
Yeah.
And so it's this really scary thing. She would do things that were just like, and really fucked. Like, she would make her daughters, she would make them strip naked and dance with their cousin, Shane, in the nude. Nikki says she was just 13 when this started happening.
Ugh, what is wrong with this person?
She's beyond, it feels like she's beyond repair. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, at this point. And what's so scary is that, of course, the level of fear, and it feels like David in this moment is easily controlled as well. Mm-hmm. And so he's not standing up for these girls. These girls can't stand up for themselves. And it's becoming this, like, just den of horrors, essentially, in their home. So in 1991, Shane moves in 1988. Tori is born in 1989. And then 2 years later, this woman, Kathy Loreno, walks into their life. And Kathy Loreno is a hairdresser. She's from South Bend, Washington. And she meets Michelle, and Michelle, Shelley girl, she treats her so well. They become really great friends. And in 1991, Kathy falls into some hard times. She gets in a fight with her family. Her living situation is tenuous. And so Shelley says, please come into our home. We'd love to host you.
Get a load of what here. I do to these kids.
But I think because Michelle has manipulated Kathy, and Kathy doesn't really have anywhere to go, it's just bad. And I think, again, like, you see this happening, and I think we see this all the time. Shelley is finding people who are easy to control and easy to manipulate. I mean, I wouldn't put it past her that that's why she had kids in the first
place. It's a little bit like profiling for cult membership.
Mm-hmm.
Where you're like, who can I mind control?
Totally. 100%.
And if they're at the right place and the right time and they're the right person, I know I can get you.
And they're just vulnerable enough that they need something that I can provide, which is a roof over their head. And so in exchange for rent for Kathy, Kathy's going to help take care of Shelley's daughters. And of course, like, Shelley's physical and emotional abuse knows no bounds. So it's very quick that Kathy starts experiencing physical and psychological abuse. She would mock Kathy. She would accuse Kathy of sleepwalking and binge eating. So she would force her to take off her clothes. She would withhold food. She would take away her clothes. She would force Kathy to sleep in the boiler room.
I mean, and this all happens really gradually, right? Because it's the kind of thing where if this happened on week one, Kathy would have probably been like, no, I'm not going to take off my clothes and sleep in the boiler room.
Think about this. She gets in a fight with her family and moves into this woman who's like, hey, free rent in exchange for helping my daughters. And you're right. It goes slowly. And I think, like,
it creeps in.
It creeps in. And again, you, like, love bomb someone, and then you start to, exert your control over them.
What really made me cringe, or what I thought was, like, interesting about this psychologically, was it seemed like she somehow makes people in her life feel like she is the be-all end-all. People do not fight back.
Well, she finds people that won't fight back, right? Like, again, I think she finds people who are so susceptible to the love, right? Like, I think you look at Shane, her nephew, who comes into her home, and, you know, his mom and dad, his dad's in jail. His mom can't take care of him. Imagine at, 16, 17, like, you have to go, like, imagine your parents are giving you up. Yeah. Like, you're just looking for love. You're looking for a
belonging
family.
Somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think Kathy is the same way. She gets into it with her family and she has to leave her home.
That's why it reminds me of a cult, I think.
It's very much like a cult. And I think, you know, she's holding this, like, prized carrot or free rent of living with this family. And I think the mood swings would happen so largely, like the amount of affection I think she would show these people, just, you know, it's really, really sad. And the abuse that Kathy endured, it's hard to describe, because where the daughters are her daughters and that's all they know, you have Kathy there who comes from another family who is enduring just horrific, horrific abuse. Like, mm-hmm. Shelley would drug her with tranquilizers, force her to work naked. They essentially had a tool that mimicked waterboarding that they would do for Kathy. They would duct tape her arms and legs and pour bleach into open sores in her body. And the daughters are privy to this, you know? I mean, and like I said before, it's like the daughters confirm this in this book and they regret not intervening, but they do acknowledge there was very little that they could do. And again, they do talk about this idea of like, if my mom was abusing this woman, she wasn't abusing me.
Does it remind you of that horrible story you did of Sophie Likens? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But again, the difference with Sophie Likens is that it was just her. Everyone in this house is being abused. Mm-hmm. Everyone. So everybody is living in abject fear and they're just happy when Shelley's eyes are not on them.
Yeah.
And what's so crazy about, I mean, there's so many crazy things about this, but you look at pictures of Shelley and she's smiling and she looks just normal. I think that's, to me, what was so striking about this story is how normal she looks.
Yeah.
You know? I'm trying to think of how I want to say this. So, okay, it's 1994 and suddenly Kathy disappears. Her family is trying to get a hold of Kathy because it feels like her family is still in contact with Kathy.
Yeah.
Kathy's not telling them any of this, what's going on. When the police go and interview Shelley and David in the no-techs, they say that she ran away with a truck driver and she moved to California. And Michelle would say, keep calling her Michelle. Shelley would say that she's since heard from Kathy and she was in contact with her. But that was it. You know, it'd be like, oh, I heard from her. But the family hasn't. So the family, Kathy's brother, decides to hire a private investigator. And this private investigator, you know, does what he does. He investigates privately. And this investigator comes to this conclusion. He says she was probably murdered by Shelley. That's what the private investigator, that's the conclusion, which I'm like, what?
Big
that
jump,
feels
man.
Like such, it's a huge fucking jump. Meanwhile,
do you think any gynecologists out there say that they're private investigators?
No, but I would, if you did, I would go to that. I'm actually looking for a new gynecologist, so could use a little recommendation.
You could use some private investigating.
If you want to be my private investigator, hit me up.
Get on Hinge.
get on Hinge. So it's around 1994. Kathy has gone missing. Shane, their nephew, is 19 years old. And after Kathy's disappearance, not too long after, Shane disappears. The no-techs claim that he ran away to Alaska to work on a fishing boat and no one has heard from him since.
But Carrie saw him when she was in Alaska.
I did. I saw him. No, I wish I did. Honestly, can I tell
you?
I really wish I did. I really fucking wish I did. That is 1994. These two people are missing. The police look into it, but it seems like they ran away to Alaska. They ran away to California. Why are these people running away? It is 2001, and in between 1994 and 2001, Sammy and Nikki, the two older daughters, they move out of the house, but Tori is home by herself with her mom and her dad. Enter this guy, Ronald Woodworth. He is 57 years old, and he goes to live with the no-techs after he loses his home in 1999. He is a gay military veteran who struggles with drug addiction. Again, really vulnerable, mm-hmm. needs a place to live. So in 1999, he moves in with the no-techs, and it's tale as old as time. He suffers from physical and emotional abuse, psychological abuse. Witnesses would say that they see him doing chores outside in his underwear. There is also a story where apparently he was on the second floor of their roof. He was on the roof, second floor roof. And they forced him to jump off the roof and land on the gravel with no shoes. He has bruises. He has cuts all over his body. They also say, I think her daughter says, who witnessed a lot of this abuse, would say that after this fall onto the gravel, Michelle would burn his feet with boiling water. She would pour bleach on these cuts and bruises. She would force him to drink his own urine. And in 2003, Ronald goes missing. At this point, Tori is 14 years old, and she goes to visit her sisters, who are no longer living in the house, and she tells them what's happening, the abuse that Ronald is enduring. And I think the three of them, maybe being physically outside of the house and physically away from Shelley, I think the three of them kind of go, okay, it's now or never. It's now or never. So her three daughters, Sammy, Nikki, and Tori, Tori grabs a bunch of Ronald's belongings as evidence, and they take them to the police, mm-hmm. and they tell them what is happening in their home. The police see this evidence. They understand that this guy is missing, and they're going, okay, we got to investigate. So this leads to a warrant and a search for the property. In this search, they find Ronald's body. Once they find his body, this blows the lid open to the other, which we now know are murders and abuses. Let's go back to Kathy. Mm-hmm. We know based on them finding Ronald's body, they did an autopsy and they discovered that it was murder. Okay. But let's go back. So David does seem to be the person now revealing what exactly happened in that house of horrors since Kathy went missing. What happened was, is they had abused Kathy so badly and they tied her up with duct tape that she got sick, and he heard noises coming from the boiler room where she was sleeping. He goes downstairs. He sees her choking on her vomit. He tries to put her on her side to clear her airway, but it is too late. Kathy Loreno is dead. Around this time, 1994, Shane has been documenting the abuses on Kathy's body. He's been taking photos, and he's hoping to use this information to go to the authorities to tell on Shelley for what's been going on. What happens is they find out, Shelley finds out, and Shelley is so angry that she tells David, her husband, to kill Shane. David shoots Shane with a rifle, kills him. So now they have the two bodies of Shane and Kathy. What they do is they burn them and then they scatter their ashes at the beach. Their bodies would never be recovered. Their remains would never be recovered. All we have is David's story. Ronald Woodworth, we know, was murdered and was buried in their backyard. What's also interesting about this is that around 2002, about a year before Ronald went missing, Shelley was a caregiver for an 81-year-old guy named James McClintock. While she is taking care of him, he has signed over his house and his estate to Shelley at this time. Mm-hmm. One of the caveats to her taking ownership of this home and this money was that he has this beloved dog named Sissy, who he loved, who he was obsessed with. So a part of his will was that he would give all of his belongings to Shelley under the one condition that she would have to wait until after Sissy died in order to inherit the inheritance, for lack of a better word.
Seems like a really bad thing to tell someone like that.
Feels like well, I don't think he knows, because no. February 9th, 2002, while she is taking care of him, he dies of head trauma from a fall at his home. And this has never been proven to be Shelley's responsibility. Mm-hmm. We cannot prove it. She says that he fell. To be honest, I am obviously skeptical. After he died,
you don't say.
After he died, the dog disappeared. Shelley says that the dog passed away, but a couple of months later, a little time after, they found Sissy, the dog, in a shelter, which to me this point confuses me. Do you know what I mean?
You mean it feels like she murders people willy-nilly, but she actually went to the trouble of taking the dog to a shelter?
Yes. Yeah, I think because the dog can't talk.
Yeah, she could be one of those people. She doesn't feel the same kind of rage at animals as she does at human beings.
Again, this woman is a fucking monster, and she deserves the moniker in which she is named as America's most evil mother. There are people that talk about her and they say, well, we can't, you know, she was never diagnosed as a psychopath. She certainly has all of the fucking traits. After all of this is discovered, Shelley and Dave are arrested. Tori goes to live with her sister. At 50 years old, Shelley is charged with 2 counts of first-degree murder in the deaths of Kathy Loreno and Ronald Woodworth. David, her husband, is charged with first-degree murder in the death of Shane Watson. And he is also with rendering criminal assistance and unlawful disposal of human remains. Both of them are able to negotiate a plea deal where essentially they are able to each get a count lower in all of their charges. And also she enters an Alford plea. Do you know what an Alford plea is?
Yeah, it's where you say, I'm not guilty, but I will not be able to be found. There's enough evidence to make me seem guilty.
Yeah, it's like, I acknowledge all of the evidence the prosecutor has against me, but I'm not admitting guilt. Mm-hmm. So she enters an Alford plea. She ends up getting she pleads guilty to second degree murder and first degree manslaughter. While the initial agreement was to have her go to prison for 17 years, the judge who reads this case sentences her to 22 years in prison. David is sentenced to 15 years in prison for second degree murder of Shane, and he serves 13 years. He's paroled in 2016. Shelley, after 18 years in prison, is released November 8th, 2022.
Yee!
Her daughters are
on the run.
So fucking scared, man. They're so fucking scared she's going to show up at their home.
I mean, I'm sure they all have protective orders, right?
I hope so. I would assume. I mean, I hope so.
Not
but like,
that keep her away. I mean, that's terrifying. Totally. That is terrifying. I cannot believe these children are put in that situation and then to have to run the risk of ever seeing this woman again.
Totally. What's interesting is the book that you read, they contributed to this book and they talk about their experience. And a lot of the stuff we know is because they were brave enough to talk about their experience and make it known. Shelley's was released from prison and her current whereabouts are unknown. We don't know where she is. A former neighbor has said that she is in poor health. So hopefully that means she won't hurt anyone else. What's interesting about it is that Sammy and Tori, two of the daughters, have forgiven Dave. Dave, their stepfather and father, has reached out to them asking for forgiveness. And they've accepted his apology. I think maybe the two of them think, hey, listen, he was just as much under her control as we were.
Everyone was a puppet.
But Nikki has not. And I think, you know what? I think forgiveness is something that is not mandatory and is to be determined by the person that has been harmed. So exactly. So I think while it's beautiful Sammy and Tori were able to forgive Dave, I also respect and I think it's good for Nikki for, you know, knowing herself. And I just want to leave with a quote about Dave. I think this is from Sammy, which is to say, she says, the reason why my mom was able to control Dave was because why I love him. He's simply a very weak man. He lacks the strength of character. He could have found happiness in a fulfilling marriage and been an incredible husband to someone, as he truly had the potential to be. Instead, his life was destroyed alongside ours. Which, you know, I think, I don't talk a lot much about David in this story but he did shoot Shane. He did kill a person. He did kill a 19-year-old kid.
Because someone told him to do it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's cult behavior. I doubt whether he thought of himself as having a choice. I'm not defending it. I guess I'm just speaking of the psychology of it.
Totally. And I think, you know, when you look at when Kathy and Shane were both killed in the home, And the daughters were all privy to this, right? I don't think the daughters believed mm-hmm. that Kathy went to California with a truck driver or Shane went to Alaska to go in a fishing boat. But they were convinced, because Shelley told them, that if they were to go to the police, if they were to tell about this abuse and these murders, that they would get in trouble too.
Right.
And they believed this woman. They believed their mother. America's most evil mother. Is there anything I'm missing from the story? You read the book. I want to know.
Oh, I read it a long time ago, maybe a couple years ago, or at least a year ago. And I just remember being like so disgusted. Mm-hmm. Just disgusted. It was that feeling of, I think the reason I didn't cover it is to be so saturated in the story to read the book. Yeah. I was just like, get me the fuck away from you and out of here was how I, like, I think yeah. I threw the book when I was done with it. I was just yeah. like, get away from me. I just was so disturbing and so relentless, because it's basically detailing all the torture and yeah. detailing all the torture and like then this. And it just gets worse and worse and worse. And there's just relentless.
There's no shining light. I mean, to me, the shining light is the three daughters, you know,
yeah.
is the kids that got out and that saved it. Like, they were able to, I mean, who knows what would have happened with Ronald if they would have said this, you know, 57-year-old guy ran away and the police would have believed them. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think the two elder daughters were able to get out of the house. And, you know, when Tori was able to see them, she was able to provide necessary evidence and they were able to come up with the plan. And, you know, I think them sharing the story too is so brave. And yeah, it's just like a really insane story. But, you know, here we are. I had to tell you the story of Michelle Notek.
She had to, folks. It's her job. No one pays her for it, but it is her job right now. It's funny, but also sad. Just like life.
But very true.
I'm going to tell you the story of Delamar Vera, and I got my information from New York Times, Guardian, NBC, CNN, Tampa Bay, LA Times, Mirror, Philadelphia Inquirer, Philadelphia Daily News, Courier Post, Kansas City Star, Herald News, Morning Call, and Times Leader. There's a lot on it, and it's a confusing story. It's a very confusing story. Hey, it didn't need to be.
Quinn is back, baby. Give us confusing stories. Let's fucking go.
It's confusing, but here, we're going to try it. We're going to give it a whirl. We'll see what happens. Let's start where the action is. December 15th, 1997. Luz Cuevas is at home with a woman named Carolyn Correa, who is, I believe, her cousin by marriage through her husband, Pedro Vera. Her brand new baby, Delamar Vera, is upstairs asleep. It's a lot of names. Don't worry. We'll get there. Baby's asleep upstairs, and she is downstairs with her cousin, and she hears an explosion and a fire is in the home. Now, the fire department gets there, and Luz is trying to run into the baby's room. But when she goes there, she gets burns on her hands and face and sees no baby in the crib. But the fire is so bad, she has to run back out. Now, the house is ablaze and there's a fire for around 15 minutes and they're able to put it out, but they do not find her baby anywhere. And she is screaming, "I think my baby's been stolen," to these firemen. Because she says to them, "Look, I went in the room and from what I could see, there was no baby in the crib. And weirdly, the window was open. And I know the window had been shut in that room." And she's, you know, they have a language barrier here as well. And mm-hmm. she's trying to explain this to them. And I think that it's something that they see as a mother grieving. And they say to her, "This is your nerves. You're so upset. You're looking for another narrative. But, you know, we think you lost your baby." And they end up looking, they can't find anything. They find what they eventually think is the baby inside a baby blanket, like the baby's remains, but it's completely incinerated. And by the way, it's not the baby, it's a piece of mattress that's burned. But they eventually will say, "Look, we know we didn't recover the baby. It's because it was a tiny baby. They're completely obliterated by this fire." She is like, "You're not listening to me.
this is the baby was stolen. But they list the cause of the fire as electric wires, improper use of homemade extension cord. There was a extension cord with a space heater attached, and they say this blew up. She's like, no, and I want this investigated. But when she looks into it, she doesn't have the money that it would take to hire anybody to investigate it. But at the same time, they don't issue a death certificate. No body was found. But you need to know that Luz is like, this baby never died. And there's a woman, Teresa, who ends up renting an apartment to Luz and her husband, Pedro, in 1999, and says that they talk about their missing daughter all the time, and they speak about her in terms as though she has not died, and they speak about her in terms as they are sure that she was taken. And they move several times after this happens. And they have another baby, Samuel, 4 years later. And Pedro works as a car mechanic for a couple of years and does stocking at the Dollar Tree store. Luz stays home with Samuel, and she has a couple older children, I think by another guy she has like an 11-year-old, a 10-year-old. Yeah. He's working at the dollar store. The stress of this, I don't know if it was stress of this, whatever happens, their marriage does end in 2002. But I do just want to say, because I think this is of note, because the story is so confusing and there's a lot of different stories, there is somebody that worked with Pedro at the Dollar Tree and says that Pedro all the time said, I don't think my baby's girl is dead. I think she was taken, and I think I know who did it. And the guy that says this, Jesus, says Pedro thought that it was somebody close to the family. And he's always saying, I think that my house burning down was a setup. Something crazy happened and someone was taking my baby that night. Flash forward to a party that, a birthday party that, depending on who you talk to, was either in January of 2003 or January of 2004. And I'll get into that discrepancy a little later. Does make a difference, but what happened there is this. That cousin that was there the night of the fire is at the party. Carolyn Correa. She lives in New Jersey, and she's at this party with one of her kids, her little daughter. They live just across the Delaware River from Philadelphia, which is where Luz and Pedro live.
And where the fire was.
Correct. Luz is at this party and sees her cousin talking to her little daughter, who is named Aaliyah, and she's named after the singer. And Aaliyah's been sent to private school. She's been groomed to be like a star. They do a lot of like beauty pageant stuff with her. And remember that Luz has not seen her baby, who went missing when she was 10 days old, sees this girl, Aaliyah, and is like, that's my daughter. She notices that she's like, that looks like me. Those dimples look like mine. And she's just like, watching this kid, staring at her. And she says that another person at the party, totally unprompted, says to her, you know, that's Carolyn's daughter, not yours. And she's like, what?
Whoa.
And that feeling is just stirred. When Luz would later talk about this, she says, I want to hug her. I want to run with her. Like, she's just like drawn to this child and feels like it's her kid. So she calls her over. She's like, come here, honey, you've got some gum in your hair. And she gets out some scissors and she cuts a little bit of her hair and takes it. She brings that hair to the police. But like, they're not going to just test it. They don't have a warrant for that.
Yeah.
So she goes to a local politician, Angel Cruz, and he listens to her story. And he's like, this is kind of a crazy story. I'm skeptical. But at the same time, the way she's telling, like, I also believe that she believes it.
Yeah. And it's like, if we can do a DNA test to let her let it lie.
100%. So he, with his help, they're able to get it tested. And it does show a match. That is her daughter. That's her daughter. Boom. So one thing going back to that night is that Carolyn was there when the fire broke out. She was downstairs with Luz. They heard an explosion And something you should know about Carolyn's past is that she was found guilty of arson in 1996, years before that fire. She was found guilty of arson at a medical office that she worked as a file clerk at. She'd gotten laid off, and it was, she got laid off because, or I fired really, because she was stealing checks.
Because she started fire. She got fired because, okay.
Fired because of the fire? No, yeah, she fired them because of the fire.
Gotcha.
What happened was they were like, you're stealing checks. And the checks were in some closet of the medical office. She put, starts a fire in it with an aerosol can to get rid of that evidence, I guess. Now, if you think about it, if she had laid an aerosol can on the space heater, she could have maybe started what seemed to be this explosion. And for the first fire, she was convicted in 1999. She only got 5 years probation. But this is a person who's not a trustworthy lady. She's done a lot of scams and cons and pretend pregnancies to get men to have to pay her money.
No.
And she, you know, she right now owes the Board of Social Services in Burlington County like $9,000 for falsely collecting public assistance. Not, we don't love the record. Now, when the fire happened, she was dating a guy named Andre Moore, and she had told him that she was pregnant when that fire happened. Fuck. And she called him the night of that fire and said, I want you to know that just a couple days ago, I gave birth to a baby girl. And he's like, oh, amazing. That's our baby girl. But in 1999, he requested a paternity test. Maybe he felt like she was not a very reliable narrator, too. And of course, he was not the father. What he didn't know was that Carolyn was not the,
is not the mother.
Mother. Now, when all this goes down, there's not a big chase necessarily. I do know that the police show up at her house and they're kind of like, you've got to tell us what's going on. And can we see this girl? And she's like, you know, they're on the phone. She, oh, yeah, come over. And then they come over and the girl's gone. And she's like, ah, I forgot. She's in the Poconos. Like, they're like, give us a picture of her. She gives them a picture of a different kid. She's definitely fucking with them.
Yeah.
And so they issue an alert for her arrest. She's charged with kidnapping, arson, assault, concealing the whereabouts of a child, and interfering with the custody of a child. And they're like, you got to submit some DNA in this lab. And she's showing up to get DNA tested and have her daughter, Aaliyah, get DNA tested. And some cop hears her in the bathroom with Aaliyah doing some weird shit. She's basically spraying something in Aaliyah's mouth and telling her not to swallow before the DNA test, because they're going to test the kid's mouth.
Whoa.
Yeah. It, they later find out what she sprayed in the kid's mouth. Do you want to know what it was?
Was it her saliva or her
cells?
Yes,
it was her own saliva. Exactly.
Wow.
So.
Wow, wow, wow.
When they separate Carolyn from Aaliyah, who is Delamar.
This poor little girl.
Carolyn absolutely loses her mind. And she says to her, goodbye. This is the last time you're going to see mommy. And Delamar gets sent to like a foster family.
No.
And she hasn't even met her real mom yet. And her real mom's so nervous to meet her. They haven't, you know.
Of course.
This little girl was growing up in a household where they speak English. Her mother barely speaks English. It's going to be like a rocky road. And her mom's Luz is really nervous because when they first meet, they're in this room and Delamar hides under a table and Luz is like, fuck, she's like nervous. She doesn't want to meet me. But then she jumps out from the table and goes, surprise. And it's like, at the same time, this is just a little kid.
She's a 6-year-old, right?
She doesn't get the seriousness of the situation. She just gets those inner feelings that she can't even probably express of turmoil and trauma and confusion and talk about attachment disorder and feeling like you don't know your truth or believe anybody or trust anybody. Oy. And they're like, the state's kind of like, this should be a really slow process to bring these families together.
Yeah.
But at the same time, people are like, we got to do it. Like a band-aid.
Because otherwise you don't want her to be like in a foster care system and then her like maybe just go. Yeah, that's ooh.
And she was raised in a house with all these other kids, these people who she thinks of as her sisters and her brothers and her grandma, you know, this other whole support system and family. But when they're asking her, you know, the news gets involved, of course, which is not good either. And they're like, oh, how are you? And she's like, I'm happy. But like, she's not happy. She's confused as fuck. And she's also probably like, the world is telling her, this is a happy ending. This is a happy story. This is, you have been reunited.
I'm also just like so confused of like the Carrera. What is Carolina?
Carolyn Carrera. Oh, and by the way, Carolyn like, Carrera, she's not with that guy Andre Moore anymore. She's no, with a new guy, Brian Busardo, who thought he was raising, he was also raising this little girl. And
yeah.
Now he is not allowed to see her.
Because he has no connection.
And but in what's his so mind, that was his stepbaby.
Is like Luce and Carolyn were in the same room when this fire happened. Carolyn suddenly gets a baby. Did she just like stop talking to Luce completely? Like, that is wild.
I think that remember how Pedro was
cousins,
like, I think
right?
it's someone.
They, no, no. It's yes, her cousin,
they're
right?
cousins by marriage on Pedro Vera's side. And Pedro Vera, I think, by a lot of his accounts, he had seen Aaliyah a couple of times. They're not close, and like, but like he had seen her and had his blink go off a couple of times. Because remember, he at the Dollar Tree was like, I think my baby was stolen, and I think it's someone I know. He kind of knew. And where the 2003, 2004 thing, where that comes in, is there are two different stories. One story is that Luz was never at that 2004 birthday party.
Mm-hmm.
Pedro was.
Right.
And Pedro says that's the case. And he saw Aaliyah and came home and told his wife.
I think I saw
her. Or his ex-wife. I think that's our kid. She did get the hair. But that happened, according to a lot of people, in 2003. Why people don't like that story and why it makes a difference is if she thought that was her kid and she cut hair from her, why did she wait a year before going to the police? Now, I don't think it's, and then it became a story of it was tidier for her to say it had just happened timeline-wise. I don't think that it needs to be harped on the way it has been, because I don't think any of us can understand how she felt. No one was helping her. People were constantly telling her she was crazy and that her kid was dead. And I think if she hung on to that hair for a year, she shouldn't be maligned for that. And we shouldn't go, oh, well, that's suspicious. Nothing is suspicious. This woman lost her baby.
I don't feel weird about that at all.
Well, what's interesting is in this mess, Carolyn is saying to everybody, I didn't take that baby. That's my baby. In fact, I'll use my own money to get a second DNA test, I'm so sure. And she does. Wow. And of course, it's not your baby. It's this is Delamar Vera. It's not Aaliyah. But the mental constitution is obviously put into question. And Andre Moore, who again was with Carolyn at the time of the kidnapping, says, I don't know who to believe. I don't know who's credible. It's a mystery. Now I'm trying to figure out the method behind the madness. Because he says, I thought she was pregnant. Then she shows up with the baby. It all made sense to me. And you say, how did this happen? How did this happen fire-wise?
Yeah.
That they were able to decide this kid was dead when they didn't find anything. And apparently they found some bones at the fire, but then they tested them. They were non-human. And they had dumped a bunch of debris from this gutted bedroom into the yard after the fact, and they sifted through it. And they found dry wool particles, which look like human ashes. But what's crazy is that they only look like ashes when a fire burns for 1,000 degrees for an hour. This fire was like 15 minutes.
So do you think she staged it? Do you think she put, or did it, maybe it was just coincidence?
Here's the thing. She's not going to ever end up being accused of the fire. And the reason why is that they already had determined that the fire was accidental. Right. They're not going to go back and say it was her, even though she has a history of arson, even though she ended up with the baby that was upstairs. Wow. It's a very complicated case. Her lawyer, this guy Zucker, is like, doesn't know what to do with it. He gets the case. He's like, maybe we're going to plead insanity, because I think maybe what happened is she was pregnant and then she lost the baby. She had a miscarriage or something. And the trauma of it was that she then went and got this baby, but had this postpartum mental illness where she thought it was her baby. Like she did a thing to fix it where she was like, it is my baby. And the truth is that there's all these stories that come out where people are saying, well, she has had a lot of miscarriages. In 2001, she had a baby with a heart defect and then it died.
Yeah.
It ends up they don't go to trial because she pleads. Yeah, she pleads no contest.
Okay. I was like, I thought they were going to do. Okay, gotcha. I was like, okay, let's make sure people get punished. But oof.
Well, so amidst all this, Lifetime says we're going to make a movie about it. But they're a little nervous because Carolyn during this time is saying, I had a co-conspirator and I'm going to name them. And it's very nerve-wracking for everybody because obviously Carolyn doesn't seem like somebody we can trust. And but by the same token, she must have worked with somebody. If she was downstairs when the explosion happened, who was upstairs? Who got the baby? Who moved the baby? Like, this doesn't feel, lighting the fire and getting the baby out of there doesn't feel like a one-man job. It doesn't. It could have been, but it doesn't feel like it is. So then when she goes to court, she publicly says, I'm going to tell you who helped me. It was Pedro Vera, the dad. He's the one that helped me, the biological father.
No.
He took the baby out of the house and put it in the car seat in my car. I already had a car seat in there because I was pregnant at the time. And then he came to my house a few times to see her over the years. Now, this cannot in any way be corroborated. So the issue of an accomplice, which people think she had, remains open.
Wow.
Now, they were going to go the route, remember, in court of, they didn't end up doing this. If, you know, she's crazy. She thought she was pregnant. She was pregnant. She lost the baby. She thought it was her baby. But they can't go that route. And the reason why they can't is she had a tubal ligation.
They
in like 1990,
do.
Like
do.
Years and years before. They always do. The pregnancy was fake. It's like a fetal abduction situation. It's not fetal abduction. Or it is.
Well, it is.
It's baby abduction.
I mean, it's baby. It's not a fetus. Kidnapping, but yeah.
But she really knew what she was doing. She's a con artist. She made a fake birth certificate. Like, and.
Whoa.
The fact that Carolyn called her husband that day to say, oh, by the way, I gave birth, like, right after taking this baby.
There's no, that you can't write that coincidence, especially, that's insane.
And Carolyn's so off, man. She's in the court and she's like, I just want to apologize for the confusion. The judge Carolyn, was like, the confusion? He says,
what confusion?
He says, you robbed a small girl of a very great deal. I mean, she robbed everybody. These people didn't get to see their
and
baby
what you
learn
did,
how
the
to
trauma
crawl
that you're putting that
walk,
child through at 6 years old, the trauma. Like, thank God the child went back to the family, but like, that poor kid. The poor kid.
So Carolyn is sentenced to 9 to 30 years in prison. And the vibe is people say, look, yes, she has depression, but she's not crazy. She's manipulative. That's what she is. And the whole case, though, the reason why I say it's complicated is that everyone's exes and everyone's in contentious ex relationships and everyone is making up lies about each other.
Wow.
So even though we can't trust Carolyn at all, it comes to be that we can't really trust anyone. We can't trust Pedro. We can't trust Luz. And I'm not saying everything's made up. I'm just saying they start pointing fingers all around at each other where, you know, what ends up happening is Pedro, Vera and Luz, they're in a custody battle for Delamar. And he has been accused of helping kidnap the baby by Carolyn and having an affair with Carolyn. Now,
who's having an affair with Carolyn?
Carolyn says, I slept with Pedro and he helped kidnap the baby. He wanted me to have the baby.
I didn't know that she said she slept with him. Isn't that her cousin? Through marriage.
Well, and then Luz says, oh, well, you know, My ex, Pedro, he once told me he wished the baby girl in my belly died. And actually, in 1997, he didn't want to investigate her disappearance. And he was like, and he's denying allegations from Carolyn. He's denying allegations from Luz. And he's the one saying, Luz isn't even telling you the truth about this party. I was the one at the party. The host at the party says that's true. Luz was not the one at the party. She was at a party in 2003.
Jesus.
But I have to say, Luz's lawyer says, people don't remember things exactly the same. It's wrong to focus on the victim. If someone's a victim, why ask if they should have caught it sooner? And that's, I do agree with that.
I agree.
On top of their issues with a woman stealing their baby, Pedro and Luz now also sue the city because they're like, you told us our kid was dead.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
Yeah.
There's an interview of Carolyn while she's in prison. And she's like, you know, Delamar was, it's been unfair that I was painted as a monster. You know, really what happened is that she saved me because I lost my child. And I just feel like, this is what she says, and I just feel like I got the bad end of the stick. They put me out there to be a monster, but I'm a loving person. If I could do something for you, I'd do it. I could have two soups in my bins, and even though I know I have to eat tomorrow, I'd give away that soup. And I'm like, what are you talking about? You'd give away soup? You kidnapped a baby.
A child.
The idea that you saved each other. She has so many fake pregnancies. You just can't believe anything she says.
But oh my God.
The real drama of this, the real fallout was that
we haven't gotten to the real drama, the real fallout. We're just getting to it.
So, well, what I would say is that, like, yes, all this happened. But like I said, it's you want it to be a simple story. It often is presented as a simple story. It's often presented as this girl got reunited with her family. And can you believe it? But this was really traumatizing. This was really, really difficult. And she went home and her mom called her Aaliyah, but sometimes called her Delamar to try to like wean her into the new name. Yeah. And like, she's doing the best she can. They're both doing the best she can. And I listened to a podcast called Crime Show that interviewed an adult Delamar Vera.
Wow.
And she was like, if you see something about me, it's probably bullshit, basically, because the story didn't end there, of course. And it was traumatic. And I was not able to deal with it because I was in a house where someone else had experienced a trauma as well. And we were basically in a situation where she says that the way she was raised by Carolyn was very hands off. That the grownups were out of the house and the kids were raising her and they were all kind of misbehaving and she had a lot of behavioral stuff. So when she moved in with Luz, she felt like Luz had this idea of, I lost my daughter, but I'm disappointed in who my daughter is. Mm. And so That's imagine that feeling, like, because she had all this behavioral stuff. So Luz is trying to control her. And the more she tries to grab control, the more Delamar like backs away. And they're chasing each other in this game where nobody can win. No. And they're not connecting. And she ends up running away and dropping out of school. And then because she drops out of school, social services gets involved. Wow. And Delamar ends up in a group home at 14 years old.
What?
So she loses her, like, Luz lost her once. She loses her again. She's only home for like 8 years and then she is gone again. And what ends up, though, I will give you.
That's horrifying.
Well, so now we can come to the happy ending, is the good news, because her being away from her mom and not being in charge of worrying about anybody's trauma but her own, she has time to heal and she starts to climb these mountains and have these successes where she gets a job and she gets a place to live and she's in therapy and she's working on herself and she and her mom are able to reconcile. And now as an adult, they have a really good relationship. And so they got there. They did get there, but I know that the Lifetime movie was like, the happy ending is I have my baby back. No. And that wasn't the happy ending, and it never is. And it was so much more complicated.
It's like whenever there's reuniting like that, it's like we see the like, oh, that's nice. But like, you don't see the fucking struggle. Like when people get reunited with their family, whether it's like Elizabeth Smart or with any, it's like Kara Robinson. It's like you can't even fathom what that is. That's wild. Oh my gosh. Thank you for telling that story.
Yeah. Of course. Well, thank you for listening, and thank you, dear readers.
Thank you, dear readers.
If you can't wait till next Friday, goodness knows you can always join Patreon.
Join Patreon. But if not, we'll see you next Friday.
Yeah, if not, don't stress. We'll be here. We're back, baby.